So this is a talk on the Arnolfini portrait by Jan van Eyck, formerly called the Arnolfini Marriage, but now renamed, which we'll discuss. It is renamed the Arnolfini portrait. So the vital statistics then, it is 1434, oil on oak panel, so typical of the Northern Renaissance, and very small, 82 by 60 cm. So it's actually under 3 feet in height. It entered the National Gallery collection in 1843. So interesting to consider how it was read by a then Victorian audience. And of course, the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood, who formed in 1848, so just 5 years later, were deeply influenced by the art before Raphael, such as this. The materials, techniques and processes first. So it is a panel of oak, as aforementioned, but this would have been coated first with size, which is an animal skin glue, and in fact rabbit skin glue would have been applied, and then a layer of gesso to smooth things over, and then a primer or imprimatura would have been added next, so that he could have worked in wet on wet fundamentally with oil, and that would have been beeswax added as well. Oil paint had been initially attributed to Hubert and his and Jan, their brothers, of course, and the advantages being the glazes, the many layers or velature that could be applied to gain greater depth. But that theory of them perhaps inventing it has gone. They were certainly innovators in the medium. Versatility of this medium meant multiple surface textures could be afforded, and certainly therefore haptic possibilities, which really suits the subject matter here. The finest pigments are in fact used, so something about the status there of the patron who's possibly Philip the Good, Duke of Burgundy. So, for example, the lapis lazuli of her sleeves, the verdigris of the gown, which is of ground copper, and the rich red drapery is a mixture of silver and sulphur. He also used his fingers and rags to smooth over the brushwork so that it was imperceptible. Otherwise, that might shatter the illusion that it was an illusion. So it's all to do with trompe-l'oeil effects. He used a small ermine brush, sort of sable, and in fact a single hair brush for such meticulous detail. The premise and the commission, possibly a betrothal or espousal, and a marriage piece therefore, so it's an epithalamic offering. Yet more recent theory suggests it might be funereal, or possibly handing over his wealth to his then wife, in a form of agreement, a concordance, sort of shaking hands for the business operation. And also that might be sealed by the calligraphic script in the background as a sort of officiality of the document. The patron, as we say, possibly Philip the Good, Duke of Burgundy, who's very wealthy, and he employed Arnolfini as his kind of cloth merchant to bring in fabrics. And the couple are shown then in a well-appointed interior, so it's all to do with wealth fundamentally, in an upstairs room. It is a reception area during the day, therefore this is probably a piano nobile, a first floor. We can tell this perhaps by the fact that out of the window we see the very top of a cherry tree, suggesting that we're higher up than the ground floor. And later 16th century panels were added to the exterior to open and close with hinges as per a triptych. So who are they? Well, probably a portrait of Giovanni di Nicolao Arnolfini, who he painted later, and the resemblance is uncanny, and also his possible first wife, Constanza Trenta, but she died in 1433, so a year before the portrait. Now, the woman, therefore, could be Giovanna Cernami. The sitters, well, he is certainly a Lucchese merchant, so from Lucca in Italy, and connected to the Medici through banking, and certainly the cloth trade. So we see something of his sartorial elegance or wealth on show and fashion. He wears a hat of plaited straw dyed black, as often worn in the summer at the time. The black dye was probably the most expensive too, in terms of the wodes and things that it employed as a technique. Clogs or pattens are on the ground his, and these are synonymous with Bruges as a kind of Venice of the north, with the canals and the dirt in the street. We can see, in fact, the flecks of dirt on the heels as evidence of his trade and outside liaisons, whereas she remains very much indoors, hence her shoes, the red slippers, are nearer to the hearth of the home through her domesticity, rather patriarchal society then. He has a tabard, and 100 pine martens were purportedly used to make up the fur of his cape. He maintains a rather earnest mien or maudlin tenor, kind of elegiac, as we will discuss, and the funereal hues or tones are linked to the Duke of Burgundy, who took up the throne age only 23 when his father was assassinated rather dramatically, and in a form of mourning, the Duke swore thereafter to always wear black. So certainly it's a homage there. She, however, wears miniver or ermine with a green doeskin dress, in fact. It's not velvet, but it's a sort of woolen cloth, but highly sought after, expensive. And 2,000 red squirrels were used for the white of the fur lining, and that was the white of the belly of the red squirrel, which had come from, in fact, England at the time, but now subsequently no longer indigenous to our country. The lace for her veil was rather rare, and she is less wealthy, arguably, and this is perhaps a morganatic marriage, therefore of convenience, therefore of unequal wealth, which may explain the fact that she holds his hand with her right, his left, etc. It's the wrong way around, as it were. Her dress is arranged in a train, and that would have need to have been done by a maid, so again, sign of their wealth. But a non-married woman would have worn their hair down and thus given it up with these sort of bizarre horns either side, suggests she was married at the time. But again, part of the enigma that shrouds this picture. To do with wealth, then, the sumptuous fabric, surfaces, the expensive materials. This, of course, links to his profession as a trader, dealing with cloths, furs, fabrics that were being imported and exported. The fruit is certainly imported, and a reminder of his origins in the south of Europe, possibly from Seville, but also they are connected to sin and the fall of man and temptation and so forth, the Eden. The glazed window bars show that this was an expensive property. Fundamentally, they were rich. There's a Gothic, rather ornate candelabra above, of course, and a similar one was held in the Bruges branch of the Medici Bank, but one had been shipped to Italy, possibly as a present. This would have been lowered from the ceiling, and then the candles could have been added and lit, and then raised up again. The trade routes were very important at this time, particularly Bruges, as the Venice of the North. Silks, fabrics, and spices from Venice, for example, lemons, figs, oranges from Spain, probably Seville, and then wood and fur from Russia, and the carpet possibly from the Flanders. So he was very actively involved, Arnolfini, in this guise. The composition and perspective, I think intentionally it's marrying up. There's lots of links which combine the two figures, such as the dog or the chandelier or the hands, and that's very much connected to this idea of a kind of harmonious concordance or agreement. Also, the composition mirrors itself, so therefore deliberate using the mirror. And all of this, therefore, is intended to resonate more broadly with their marriage, their harmony. The space, however, is a product of really empirical, as opposed to scientific, theoretical, mathematical perspective. It's a box-like space, and it, therefore, is shallow, and maybe that creates more intimacy for the obvious subject link. And Van Eyck was actually a master of non-Euclidean geometry, so he wasn't that au fait with the developments in Italy, contemporaneous developments there by Masaccio, Brunelleschi, et al., and the theories of Alberti. This is more a rudimentary perspectival scene. Symbolism of meaning. There is a single lit candle on Giovanni's side only, which contrasts with the sort of guttered out, burnt down candle whose wax stub can be seen just above the wife on the right, on our right side. So that has obvious resonance that we'll discuss. His wife was not pregnant, was often thought, but holding up her full-skirted dress in a contemporary fashion. It was said that the Queen was pregnant at the time, and it was a statement more than a fact that she was pregnant. It was actually a childless marriage, we found. It was set possibly during early summer, the cherry tree in evidence, yet the furs were worn. I think these were generally worn all year round, in fact, confusingly. He is nearer the window, representing the outside world of trade and his career and vocation. She, however, is nearer the bed, as I mentioned, an androcentric touch there, the domestic role of the woman. The five small tondo O's, the circular sort of coin-like shapes in the mirror that surround it, five of those are on her side represent the death of Christ in the Passion, whereas the five on his side, Christ is alive. Again, obvious symbolism or iconography. And turning more to the objects and iconography, there's so much here that Panofsky and others have decoded or encrypted. The shoes, the placement reflects their roles, as aforementioned. Her red slippers are in the hearth of the home. The shoes have been removed. Old Testament, Moses, do not come any closer. Take off your sandals for your standing on holy ground. Because, of course, this is potentially a domestic wedding, which is not that uncommon, incidentally. Also, it was the case that the man tend to give the wife the clogs as a gift after marriage. Oranges in the background, wealth, temptation, as we say, Eden, fall of man, and trade and imports and wealth. The dog is a Brussels Griffin Terrier, suggested to represent fidelity. We think of Fido and Fideles, and therefore fidelity. As per also tomb sculptures, often at the foot of a woman, the lion invariably at the foot of a man. The background, we have the Lectus Genialis, which is a marriage couch, and we have the settle furniture, a day bed with these sort of pendulous bolsters. It's been put away as a reception area in the day. Statuette of St. Margaret in the background. And she was the patron saint of childbirth, and her attribute, which is crouched at her feet, is the dragon. So St. Margaret of Antioch was consumed by Satan disguised as a dragon, and she was then ejected as the beast's stomach kind of blew up. It's an extraordinary story. She then brushed away the remains of the dragon, and it may well connect, therefore, to the brush behind. And also newlyweds often brushed the stoop or porch of a new home to show others that they were married, and possibly to expel the devil. So, as per the brush in the picture, this could represent, obviously, St. Margaret as an extension of that story, or St. Martha, who is the patron saint of the household. Again, obvious resonance. The hands are unequal, therefore, unequal social status, standing, a morganatic marriage, because they're not equal hands, as in right, right, left, left. The legal script is that of signing the registry, some sort of legality binding the two together. The mirror is convex, dubbed at the time sorcière, as in synonymous with witchcraft, because it kind of distorted in a fish-eyed lens view the view behind, and therefore they saw this was tantamount to witchcraft. These mirrors were actually not that expensive. Flatter would have been more expensive, because you could pour the molten glass into a mould with a convex sort of drop, and these were pioneered in Augsburg in Germany. We see in that mirror the witness and a priest. The candle has been burnt down, as we say, on her side, not his. And also, though, the candle can represent, in church, a departed soul. And we know of the 1433 record of her death. Could also be the light of the world, light of God, his presence, watching over them. Or the idea that there's one candle, two becomes one. We also have the amber prayer beads in the background, known as the Pater Noster, as in the start of the Lord's Prayer. These were generally a betrothal gift and also symbolised purity in the Virgin Mary. Talking of symbolism further, the colours. The green is said to represent fertility. Also in Italy, green cloth was synonymous with trade and signing and securing business deals. A piece of green cloth was given. Red for passion, the mirror is pure and reflection there. We have white as well on her veil, for example, for purity, chaste connotations of the virginal state before the consummation of the marriage, arguably. Various theories afoot, of course, and ongoing. Posthumous piece, possibly, commemorative following the death of the first wife in 1433, the year before the picture, so he may have changed it. Now, there is evidence to support this in the underpainting or pentimenti. Self-portrait of the artist, possibly, and his wife, Margaret, hence the presence of St. Margaret, as a clue. Is it him handing over the estate to her in a legal ceremony, hence the signature, the officials, the witnesses? But various confusion and conclusions have ensued. For example, the marriage was unsuccessful. They had no children. Infrared and pentimenti represent the changes, such as the positioning of his hand, which is more sort of in the guise of waving previously. Also, their hands were much more joined together, higher up and clasped. Now hers is falling away, which suggests the change post-death in her part. 1997 in France, key evidence arose, and that was from the Duke of Burgundy, Philip the Good's records, and sums of money on Arnolfini's wedding day recorded as 1447. Now, the painting here is 1434, and Van Eyck had even died in 1442, making that kind of almost impossible. Yet there were two Arnolfinis called Giovanni, living in Bruges at the time. So they were cousins, purportedly. And we know that Costanza Trenta died in 1433 in childbirth, which may again link us back to St. Margaret, patron saint of childbirth. This may explain her pallor and his rather mournful or elegiac look and the sign of the benediction in positioning of his right hand. Now, its legacy, very important, of course. We think of Las Meninas in particular in the 17th century by Velasquez as a piece that was kept for time immemorial also in the Prado, but it's really now was in the collection of Philip IV of Spain, which meant, of course, that Velasquez knew it and saw it, and he's homaged it in the mirrored reflection of the royal couple. Obvious impact on the Pre-Raphaelites in the mid-19th Victorian epoch when the picture actually arrived in the National in London, and in particular people like Millet show that influence in terms of painstaking realism, symbolism that had to in fact be decoded by John Ruskin in the Times at the time to a bemused public. Such was the complex layers of iconography. Also, even in another epithalamic painting, a wedding piece, Hockney's double portrait of Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy the Cat. This shows again the sort of double portrait in an interior as a homage to the original by Jan van Eyck.